What's up? Welcome back to Nostalgia. What's going on in pop culture right now? New podcast dedicated to one thing. That would be The Flash and DC and the future of DC. Deep dive on that film. Deep dive on the future of DC. And there's a lot of other stuff I haven't gotten to this week. I will get to that in the following week. It's a busy time. And I can't wait to get into all the stuff I haven't gotten to yet. But make sure you subscribe. YouTube.com/NostalgiaPod. Linktree.com/NostalgiaPod. Hit the playlist in the links below for the best songs of the year, updated weekly. Let me know what's good. Let's get into The Flash. What's up? Welcome back to Nostalgia. Dave here with a review of The Flash, the latest DC superhero film. It's out, and it's been a long time coming. I'm going to talk about my thoughts on the film, the incredibly polarizing nature regarding this film due to the presence of star Ezra Miller, the future of DC, spoilers, all that stuff. Can get into everything. I think there's a lot to get into, a lot of interesting things about this film. So I'm going to get into all that. I'll start with non-spoilers and say that I like the movie. You know, The Flash literally has been a long time coming. This film was announced 9 years ago. Ezra Miller was cast as Barry Allen by Zack Snyder so long ago at this point. And this movie has been in development hell for forever. You know, The Flash felt kind of a piece with like Avatar 2 in the sense that it's always getting delayed. But, you know, four directors later, you know, so many people officially were signed on. Other people were attached at one point. Rick Famuyiwa, John Francis Daley, and Jonathan Goldstein, even Lord and Miller were teaming up with Grant Morrison to tackle this film. All those creators fell through. It ended up getting made by Andy Muschietti, who made It, with a script from Christina Hodson, who wrote Birds of Prey, and there's some other story credits as well. The Flash got across the finish line, and I was actually lucky to see a fan screening on Monday night, or just early screening, and the film's coming out end of the week. So again, I'll start with non-spoilers, but yeah, I think there's a lot to get into with this, and I'll say I like the movie. I think it's a long film. It's like 2 hours, 20 minutes, and definitely has some bloat to it, some things that don't work. But for the kind of movie it is, you know, this big, bombastic, multiversal tale in the vein of the modern comic book movie, I think it's broadly successful, certainly better than I expected it to be. And I had a really good time with it. Obviously, there's been a lot of hype in the press in the past few months with, you know, Warner Brothers Discovery CEO David Zaslav, as well as new DC Studios head James Gunn, hyping up The Flash as one of the best comic book movies ever made. And I think that's a bit hyperbolic to call it one of the best ever. But I think it is quite good. Definitely one of the best of the DCEU movies. I think that's pretty clear, and I'll get into the specifics of that later. And it's interesting to think about this movie in terms of the other recent comic book movies from Marvel and DC that have tackled the multiverse in one way or another. I'll get into that as well. There's a lot of interesting things about this movie, the timing of the movie as well, you know, and I think, of course, there's, you know, a lot of, I think, baggage, like unavoidable baggage with this movie due to Ezra Miller, who, you know, at one time was thought of as a kind of promising rising star, atypical star at that, you know, with like Perks of Being a Wallflower and stuff like that. And Ezra Miller, you know, cast as The Flash, again, so long ago, the movie taking forever to come out, no fault of Ezra Miller's. Ezra Miller only playing Barry Allen, you know, in Justice League, you know, the multiple versions of the Justice League film we got, of course, and that was really it. And obviously, in the interim, you know, since then, Ezra Miller had a solid supporting role, sizable role in the Fantastic Beasts films. That, of course, is now over. And of course, more recently, Ezra Miller has been incredibly controversial. And we can't really overstate how bad things have been for Ezra Miller. These are not just allegations, although there are plenty of those. These are also legitimate legal issues, including arrests and video evidence and things like that. Really running the gamut of poor action, poor deeds, doing things in bad taste. The severity definitely ranges, but a lot of bad stuff to get into. It's quite the deep dive if you're unfamiliar, but Ezra Miller has been, you know, kind of damaged goods for, you know, about a year at this point. And notably, Ezra did not promote The Flash. There was no press junket with Ezra Miller. Ezra Miller was not promoting this movie at all. The marketing was doing a lot to focus on other aspects of The Flash other than Ezra Miller as the leading man. You know, Michael Keaton's return as Batman was front and center in a lot of the marketing. The presence of a new Supergirl character was also shown in the marketing. You know, they were trying to do everything they could to promote The Flash sans the star of The Flash. Now, Ezra Miller did pop up at the red carpet premiere of the movie, and that was, I think, a bit surprising, but in fact, really was Ezra's first public appearance in like the past year. And Ezra didn't take any questions or anything. And whether people think that's right or wrong for Ezra to be at the red carpet, I mean, just take a look at like Ezra's Wikipedia. Ezra Miller is not up to any other projects. He is not signing new deals. And even though I think Ezra Miller is quite good in The Flash, and I'll get into that, I have a hard time seeing Ezra Miller bouncing back, certainly to the stature that he was once thought of to have as a rising talent in Hollywood. And I think other people were throwing out there, you know, so, oh, is The Flash going to be canceled because of Ezra Miller's baggage? You know, is that worthwhile? Is that the right thing to do? Things of that nature. You know, when Warner Brothers Discovery took over, you know, a new management with David Zaslav coming in, you know, in the last year, the Batgirl film, which featured Michael Keaton, canceled for write-down tax purposes, never to be released. A lot of people said, oh, do that with The Flash. Better yet, recast The Flash. You have Grant Gustin, popular portrayal of Barry Allen on the CW for a decade. Do that. Redo the movie. But, I mean, cynically speaking, it makes a lot of sense that DC and WBD didn't go down this road, because David Zaslav has been front and center talking about trying to pare down the debt of Warner Bros. Discovery and really focus on that. And also bringing back the theatrical box office as a core part of their movie making business, you know, in the post HBO Max film debut era under Jason Kylar. So The Flash, a $200 million movie that needs a strong box office to justify its budget and get WB some cash again, The Flash was not going to incur hundreds of millions of more dollars in reshoot costs. That's just kind of like the business fact of the matter, even if I think a lot of people would have been on board with that kind of approach. And then the other thing with this is going to be the last iteration of the Ezra Miller Flash character anyway. The DCEU, as we know it, of course, is coming to an end later this year. It's not over yet. The timing would have been better if this was the final movie, and I'll get into that. But it's coming to an end. You know, the DC Studios rebrand under James Gunn and Peter Safran is underway. And I talked about that slate when that was announced, you know, a few months ago. So it was almost not really worth sinking additional resources in, again, from the cynical point of view. So long story short, a lot of baggage going into the Flash movie, which, again, I think is pretty good. And, you know, for the people that were involved in the making of this movie, some of them for a very long time, it's a bit unfair that stuff that doesn't have anything to do with them is going to affect people's reception to this movie due to the nature of the star in front and center. But that's just how it goes, you know, and I think it's perfectly within people's rights to want to not watch the movie due to the presence of Ezra Miller, given the things Ezra has done and been accused of. I think that's a perfectly reasonable stance to have, and people will share that. You know, we'll see how successful the movie ends up being. I think the box office projections look okay for a big movie. Not spectacular, though. It's not looking like we're going to get a $100 million opening, so we'll see how the legs fare with this, given positive word of mouth and, you know, China box office and things like that, which is looking okay as well. So, you know, more to come on the business side of things. At the end of the day, it's kind of a sunk cost, like really the rest of these DCEU movies are. Anyway, they're creatively leaving this era behind, and I think they're just trying to get these out the door, get as much cash as they can, and wipe their hands clean of the Snyderverse. And whether you're a fan of that or not, that's what's happening. So anyway, let's get into The Flash. So I like the movie. I think it is pretty broadly successful as being a genre-hopping, multiversal tale. You know, it's an adaptation of the famous Flashpoint storyline. This has been the expectation of what this movie would be about for years, almost as long as the movie been announced. And of course, this movie was presented as a natural like reset point for the DC continuity, given the time traveling multiple timelines nature of that storyline. And that is kind of what we get. And it's coming at a awfully interesting time for comic book movies, because the presence of the multiverse has become oh so mainstream since Into the Spider-Verse, the Sony animated movie, kind of first introduced it at a mainstream stage at the end of 2018. Since Into the Spider-Verse, we've of course had Spider-Man No Way Home, the second highest grossing MCU movie of all time. We've also had Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. We've had the Best Picture winner from A24, Everything Everywhere All at Once, not a comic book movie, but literally a Best Picture winner was about multiple timelines, a hard multiverse movie. Of course, the sequel to Spider-Verse, Across the Spider-Verse, just came out literally, you know, was it 2 weeks before The Flash? Not the best timing, because there's some similarities between the two, which I'll get into. Point is, this has been happening a lot. Also, I think the treatment of cameo characters, cameo appearances, is similar to what we've seen recently, and I'll get into that at the end. Obviously, spoilers for that. But it's funny that like this is, and I guess Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania also kind of fits into this bucket as well. It's really funny that we've kind of jumped feet first into the deep end when it comes to the multiverse, and I'm really curious to see if this is going to feel played out in short order. You know, obviously, the MCU with Kang, multiple Kangs, I forget the terminology that each universe uses in terms of like the variant timelines and convergence points and all those things, but the presence of multiple timelines, multiple Earths, multiple futures, multiple paths, that's not going away. It seems to be the core tenet of the immediate next, you know, big arc with the MCU with Kang. And obviously, we'll see what happens with Jonathan Majors playing Kang, given he is also now polarizing, controversial due to some allegations similar to Ezra Miller. I wouldn't put him quite in the same bucket as Ezra Miller, because there's a lot of there's a lot more quantity when it comes to Ezra, as well as a lot of actual like substantive charges and like video evidence and stuff. We'll see. It's still early days with Jonathan Majors stuff. We'll see what happens. But assuming they still go forward with the Kang storyline, maybe they just recast it, it doesn't make a difference to the storytelling purposes. We'll see. But the point is, multiverse is all over the place right now. And I think The Flash is going to be remembered as one of the stronger efforts. I think a big part of that, too, is the way this story works is it's awfully melodramatic. It's awfully character-driven, at least the way the setup of it is. It's kind of, you know, very similar to the origin of the Flash character, kind of the classic stuff where Barry Allen's mother is killed and his father is framed for the death, or just, his, you know, convicted of the death, even though he didn't commit the crime in prison, and thus Barry Allen has no parents growing up. That's kind of like the core tenet of that character, similar to how like Bruce Wayne losing his parents as Batman, same thing. And I think the fact that like it's really grounded in the personal is what kind of sets this movie apart for me, where something like Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness felt a bit short because it just didn't feel quite as willing to go all the way with the concept and didn't have the character work to back it up either. So thus it was just kind of a middling effort at this type of storytelling. I think because The Flash is so character driven in terms of motivation, that I think really helps you kind of get invested in this kind of storytelling. Because again, if you think about multiversal storytelling, this is obviously always going to be the problem if you don't do it right. You do eliminate stakes in a certain sense when you know everything can be undone if you're literally having a lead character, The Flash, who can run so fast that he can run back in time. That can kill some tension if you don't do it right. But I think The Flash more or less handles this well. Now, I think what the pain point you might have with The Flash, I think definitely the weaker element of this movie, is that towards the end, it gets a bit bloated and it gets incredibly plot heavy. I think the best aspects of this movie is really the setup to that point. You know, once Barry goes into the past and you know, this is in the trailer, it's not really a spoiler, encounters a past version of himself in a different timeline. I mean, the movie really kicks into high gear. You have Ezra Miller giving two different performances as both current Barry and Barry of the past, 18-year-old Barry, a Barry without powers yet, a Barry who's not yet the Flash. And thus, Ezra Miller is able to give two completely different performances at the same time, often in the very same frame, often in the very same scene. And that is honestly really strong. Hats off to Ezra Miller. You have to give credit where it's due. It really carries the film. And I think the dueling performances from Ezra Miller, the Barry we know, which is kind of more of a wounded warrior, someone who is desperate to go into the past to save his mom upon learning that this power is possible for him, that combined with the precocious youngster who's a lot more optimistic in life, also kind of like a giddy, like man-child at times, it's a real dueling banjos type thing. I think it's really fun. And how those characters grow from there once they meet each other goes a long way. And the beginning, too, there's tons of humor. I think in general, it's a pretty funny movie. Ezra Miller has good comedic timing, and there's a lot of kind of body humor and stuff regarding the Flash's powers, you know, phasing through walls and running so fast that all your clothes burn off and you're naked in public. There's just a lot of funny laugh moments that I quite chuckled with. The crowd I was in was laughing a lot. That dynamic is really good. The other, I think, really key aspect is Michael Keaton. Of course, Michael Keaton played Batman twice in the 90s in the Tim Burton movies. People know. They did not shy away from the fact that Michael Keaton was back in this movie. In a sense, that would have been an amazing surprise, but I understand why I was in there for the marketing. And this is not a phoned-in performance, you know. It's been really in vogue lately to bring back actors of the past, of past iterations of continuity in these type of storylines, as just a referential nod to the audience, to the fandoms, you know? And that's usually all it ends up being. The key exception, of course, would be No Way Home, where Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire were key parts of that movie. But otherwise, think of, like, Multiverse of Madness, bringing in Patrick Stewart as Professor X, or bringing in John Krasinski as Mr. Fantastic, which was literally rumored internet casting. Like, that didn't exactly amount to a whole lot, right? Now, in this case, Keaton, I think, really fits the movie because the whole premise of the story, and I guess we're going to start getting into spoilers here, the whole premise of the story where Barry learns that in this past timeline Barry's ran back to, things are different. You know, he realizes that the Batman he knows is different. It's not Ben Affleck, you know, the Batman we know, who we see in the beginning of this movie. It's actually a different Batman, an older Batman, a grizzled hermity Batman, in this case, one played by Michael Keaton. And Keaton really fits the, I think, vibe and aesthetic of that timeline really well. And I think the presence of the performance, I think, goes a really long way. There's some obvious nice touch points, too, where Keaton's using gadgets, and they're clearly like analog, like 90s gadgets a la his movies. And those are funny moments. But, you know, you have Keaton as the one who explains the premise of multiverse to Barry and thus to the audience, for those who don't know, where just because you went back in the past to change the future doesn't mean the past at that point you came to was the same as the past you were leaving. And that different spaghetti, as he puts it, you know, both the past and the forward are different, forward and back. Honestly, like, really astute way to explain it, and Keaton, I think, is quite committed to it. But overall, just his presence, I think, does a great job with the movie, and he actually has, like, fun chemistry with Ezra Miller, both Ezra Millers. So yeah, I really like that, you know. I think from that point, it's like where the movie might start to lose some people, because to this point, it's a really fun thing for a lot of reasons. Fish out of water, in a certain sense, where you have Barry meets younger Barry. Younger Barry has to get his powers. Older Barry takes younger Barry to Star Labs to, like, put him in place for the lightning strike to get his powers. That's all, like, really fun stuff. I really quite enjoyed all that. I like the buildup of, like, they realize, like, what can they do? Because an inciting incident happens, as it often does. In this case, General Zod comes back to Earth looking for Superman, just like he did in Man of Steel. Once again, we are retconning or experiencing the end of Man of Steel once again. We did this in Batman vs. Superman with Ben Affleck being there when Zod and Kal-El were fighting. Now are there once again. And in this case, you know, Barry, he knows what happened because that happened in his storyline already. You know, Superman and Zod fights, a ton of people in Metropolis get killed. Very controversial aspect of Man of Steel from 10 years ago. People know this, right? But it's a really funny moment. It's like, oh, we have to figure out what we have to do. And Barry's like, okay, well, let's look up Cyborg. Let's look up Wonder Woman. Let's look up Aquaman. Let's go find Superman. Let's go find Batman. You know, because our Barry Allen, knows all these people and knows what they do and where they live. And he finds out that this timeline, there is no Aquaman. Cyborg never had his accident. Superman didn't actually make it to Earth. And Batman is an older, retired Batman, Michael Keaton this time. It's not young Ben Affleck. That's like a really fun moment to spend time with. And at that point, I think it's fun for fans to like kind of be in like an alternate version of a continuity you're familiar with. I think it's a good use of like this multiversal storytelling to have it be referential like that, where it's like actually like kind of driving plot in a fun way. And I think probably the hang up that you can start having here, though, as I said, is you know, after we have the Wayne Manor scene where both Barrys meet up and convince Keaton Batman to help them defeat Zod, because they know what to do. They have to go after Superman, and Keaton Wayne was actually aware that Superman was in like a, I believe it was a Soviet, Serbian, Siberian like prison militia guarded or something or other. And we go there. It's kind of fun set piece. You see some of the gadgets. We go, you know, fly with the Batwing over into Russia somewhere, and they drop in looking to free Superman so they can take on Zod. Things happen, and we find out that captured was not Superman. It was not Kal-El. It was actually Kara Zor-El, aka Supergirl, played by Sasha Calle. And Supergirl and Sasha Calle's performance is completely new to the DCEU. And, you know, in a sense, that sets up kind of interesting. Oh, no Superman in this universe, but there's Supergirl. Let's see what happens. And, you know, from that point, you know, Supergirl, once they free her, bring her back to Wayne Manor, she, you know, decides that she's not going to really help the humans fight Zod because she's not a human. She's Kryptonian. And when she arrived here, the humans imprisoned her, these Russian people. And then she kind of flies off. It's like, oh, fuck, that's gone. And then kind of quickly, Supergirl goes to meet Zod, treating with like the U.S. military or whatever, sees them start to wax a bunch of humans, and she has a change of heart and comes back. That felt like awfully abrupt to me. And I think just the whole presence of like, oh, Supergirl's also in this movie felt a bit like overstuffed, unnecessary, just because Sasha Calle, it's not her fault. She's given very little to do in this movie. Certainly, the motivation flip is nearly instant in terms of screen time. And there's just not a lot of moments for her. You know, I guess this almost would be more akin to like one of those cameos in Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, where it doesn't actually amount to a whole lot. The characters didn't have enough to do to make much of an impression beyond being, oh, that's cool, you know, and like, I guess it's a tad better just because, like, oh, it's like this is a twist on Superman, and this Zod tells us in this universe that they actually intercepted Superman's escape pod from Krypton, and he never made it to Earth, and he's actually gone already. You know, the baby didn't survive, as he says. It's like, that's all fine and good, but it just felt like this character wasn't served well enough. But that's in contrast to, I think, Keaton Batman does feel like necessary and lived in, and actually really helps drive the movie. So that was a bit of a miss for me, even if it's fun to see Supergirl flying around and whatnot. And you know, we get to this third act where the Barrys, with the help of Supergirl and Batman, are trying to, you know, really just kind of reverse, first they're trying to defeat Zod, and then once they realize that they can't defeat Zod and Batman and Supergirl are dead, let's go back in time and try again. And that presents a really fun, brief moment where, like, oh, we can see a scene we just saw and they'll try and do something different. You know, it's you've seen the scene before, but it's always fun to spend time and stuff like that. And it's not working. And that's where we kind of get to, like, the emotional, like, I think, like, core of the film, where, like, our present-day Barry realizes that the mistake he had previously made that started off this whole movie, where you're going back in time to fix a past mistake, you know, in this instance, going back in time to, you know, try and save Supergirl and Batman and defeat Zod, it's futile going back in time to try and fix things. And as, you know, Keaton, you know, kind of previously outlined back at Wayne Manor, timelines, they're like these certain convergence points, things that will always happen. And as Barry makes a remark that, oh, you're Batman, but you had Alfred too, just the way my Batman had an Alfred, things like that. And like Barry, present day Barry has to get through to, you know, current Barry or young Barry that mom is always going to die. We can't stop it. And that kind of acceptance needs to happen. And there's this kind of specter of in the Speed Force or whatever, when they're going back in time, where there's another version of young Barry who's been trying to feverishly going back in time and trying to fix things the entire time, being possessed by this kind of like a demonic look to him. That kind of, it's good enough, I guess. I don't know. It doesn't really do a whole lot, just because it's kind of serving the plot as kind of a means to an end type thing. It's fine. And yeah, like it ends with normal Barry, our Barry, going back in time to, or going forward again to, fix what he had done, you know, and letting his mom basically get killed and thus fixing everything. And yeah, I think the emotional moments land well enough, as well as they can. And Ezra Miller deserves some credit for handling the kind of softer scenes, I think, pretty well. You know, like I said, it's a lot of family melodrama in the Barry Allen story at the end of the day. Yeah, and then it ends, and I think, yeah, like I said, I think it's pretty fun. The opening set piece, I should note, which is back in present day, where Barry remarks that he's like the Justice League's janitor. Really fun set piece where he jumps up to save these maternity ward that's collapsing from in collapsing a skyscraper, saving all these babies in slow-mo, having to eat food to keep his speed up. That's all good fun. That's where we get the Ben Affleck appearance as Bruce Wayne. All fun. And we even get a unexpected appearance from Wonder Woman. I'm not sure if that was in the marketing. If it was, I had missed it. But Wonder Woman has a brief moment as well. Funny moment with the lasso of truth on both Affleck Batman and Barry Allen, saying some funny stuff. And yeah, I think that set piece is pretty strong. Like I said, I think the humor, just in general, the chemistry between both Barrys, a lot of funny stuff in the film. And like that, I think the general structure is pretty strong. My biggest complaint is that it gets a bit like overlong with plot at the end, and like the presence of Supergirl isn't fully delivered on in a, I guess, convincing enough or necessary enough way. So still pretty good time. You know, I think, it's coming at a interesting time for the end of the DCEU, because this would seemingly be a fitting place for the DCEU to end. It's a multiversal time-hopping story, having a really winking ending in terms of timelines, with cameos. There are several cameos in this. They're really just referential cameos for the audience. They don't really amount to a whole lot, but there's some funny ones. They got claps in my theater. I think they're fine, but they're fun for what they are, related to Superman and Batman, specifically these types of cameos. I won't spoil them, but you can look them up. One of them's been spoiled by the director already, strangely enough. But yeah, like, you would think this would be a great ending place for the DCEU. Clean break, James Gunn, Peter Safran era kicks off in 2025 with Superman Legacy. Nope, we're still getting Blue Beetle in August and Aquaman, The Lost Kingdom, in December. And then, of course, we're getting like the Elseworlds, Joker 2, next year as well, which is a bit separate. So, very curious the way Aquaman will end. Blue Beetle feels like a one and done thing, no matter how good it ends up being. Curious how Aquaman goes, because that's like, you know, a core tenet of the Snyderverse story, you know, the Jason Momoa's Aquaman. And yeah, I'm curious if that's like kind of a self-contained Aquaman movie and that's it, it's over, or they present a little extra finality to the DCU in some way. You certainly would not expect the Aquaman story to be the place to do that, but again, we'll see. Yeah, and I think for good and bad, we're closing the book on the Snyderverse after only 10 years. You know, Man of Steel was 2013. Feels like it's been longer. You know, and I think a big part of that is just there weren't exactly as many movies as you'd expect in DCU in a 10-year period. Given the place we've got to with Marvel, and now we're at a place where the volume of Marvel has started to get on people's nerves and the quality has come under question. But we've got so many Marvel movies. Meanwhile, in 10 years of the DCU, the 10 years of the Snyderverse, we had one Superman movie, one Flash movie, two Aquaman movies, one Justice League movie, two Wonder Woman movies, and two Suicide Squad movies. That's really it, right? Batman vs. Superman as well. Yeah. I mean, we didn't even get a standalone Batman movie in this continuity. The one we got was separate, of course. Robert Pattinson and Matt Reeves' Batman, which I love. So, I think I said this when I talked about the DC Studios reaction. It just needed to happen. The clean break, the reset of the continuity of the storytelling, even if there are things people liked. Like Henry Cavill's performance as Superman is perhaps the most popular thing about the DCU. People really like Gal Gadot's Wonder Woman as well. Despite all that, these things a lot of people agree on. You just, I think, needed to reset everything. And I hope they do stick with resetting everything. Like, even if they wanted to, I hope they do not bring back Ezra Miller, even if Ezra Miller was baggage-free. You just need to do this reset in a committed way. And it seems like they're going there. You know, we have the casting reporting about Superman Legacy, which seems to be well underway with David Corn-Sweat and Tim Brittany and one other guy, are like and Nicholas Holt are the favorites to play Superman. And Emma Mackey, Rachel Brosnahan, and Phoebe Duaner are the favorites to play Lois Lane. Honestly, really great job with that casting. I think Corn-Sweat and Emma Mackey would be my top choices. Corn-Sweat certainly looks the part, and Emma Mackey, I think, is really awesome and still pretty young. Would be a nice, smart piece of casting. Rooting for those two. Seems like we'll hear about that soon. They're doing screen testing. Now, I feel like you can't go forward with those new pieces of casting and reestablish Superman in a genuine and committed way if you're also keeping Momoa around or keeping Gal Gadot around. Like, you need to, I think, completely remove this era and move forward. And I think a movie like this, The Flash, has a fair amount of nods to the past. You know, obviously the plot of Man of Steel is a huge aspect of this Flash movie. And we're even flashing back further, of course, with Keaton's strong presence in the film. There's some references for the hardcore fans, some fun nods, and I think people have to accept that this is it. You know, we're moving forward, and I have faith in the Gunn-Safran team, really just because they seem to be presenting a unified front and a committed approach to, you know, real serialized storytelling, which I think has just been the way audiences want to see blockbuster franchises told. You know, we're going to see a similar approach to James Bond moving forward when it's a more serialized approach to plot and long-form story. So, you know, this Flash movie, I think it's a bit of a minor miracle that it's as good as it is, and despite its flaws, it's as good as it is and as convincing as it is, given all the things that are against this movie. So, you know, if you're even the minor fan of the DC films at all and have any connection to this last 10-year run of DC films, you should see The Flash, because I think you'll have a good time with it. And it's impossible not to think of like what could have been if the management at Warner Brothers was more competent and more committed to a singular vision. You know, whether you were a fan of Zack Snyder's approach or not, I'm certainly up and down on that. But the lack of a coherent and committed plan that stuck around for an extended period of time is so paramount. Like, what would have happened if the first Flash movie came out in 2017 or 2018? You know, like, who knows? But that's the past. That's a different timeline that maybe Barry Allen can go back and check out for us sometime. But let me know, once you've seen The Flash, how did you feel about it? Did you like it as much as I did? Did you get hung up on some of the flaws? What do you want to see next from DC in this new regime in the years to come? And for more movie reviews, subscribe, and I'll see you next time. All right, that's going to do it for the pod this week. Next week, I'm going to be catching up on a lot of stuff I haven't gotten to yet, including The Bear Season 2 on Hulu, Wes Anderson's Asteroid City, The Return of Righteous Gemstones on HBO, Marvel Secret Invasion starting on Disney+, Black Mirror back on Netflix, a bunch of music as well. I'll be doing some catch-up, so make sure you subscribe, youtube.com/nostalgiapod, linktree.com/nostalgiapod. Hit the links below, get the pod any way you can, just make sure you get it. See the playlist in the links below for the best songs of the year, updated weekly. Let me know what's good, and I'll see you next week.